Blog Talk Radio.
I heard the music, and then I don't hear anything. What's going on? Okay, I hear you unmuted. I don't hear anything. No voices. I'm going to dial back in again.
As soon as possible. Thank you ever so much.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Moonlight glows in the shroud of a secret mystery. A sexy voice speaking from the telephone that she just can't seem to resist anymore. For it is a deep echo of the sensual seduction to her climax, the steaming words of a dripping passion of her suave lover. Words melting into the vapor of the wet wrapping raindrops where the sweat covers the satin sheets with the liquid humidity. In the Pacific wind's reach, the curtains of a lover's escapade from the east coast of New York on to the west coast of L.A. Her beauty is his weakness, and her luscious lips his desires. He is the exotic fantasy of carnal dreams and wicked temptation, the taste from the lustful fruit of her taboos and sinful ecstasy, the man undressing her with the attraction of his charm. He is the smooth operator of excitement she dials every night, and she is the sculptured woman behind the naked silhouette, the voluptuous mistress of the erotic verses of his courtship. Her twinkling eyes mesmerize with the spell of a sultry vixen. He is the man that makes her body shiver always with his voice. She is the woman whose name he utters with a vibrant moan. The criminal of her pleasures, arresting her attention with the teasing game of catch me if you can. Diamond nights and ruby lights, the bustling streets are alive. She waits for midnight to come, to down his number once more, a license to tame the wildfire burning in her begging bosom with the sounds of a saxophone. For he is the smooth operator, burning at her begging bosom. He is the smooth operator. Oh la la. Oh la la. In the poem.
Okay, well, welcome back, Thomas.
Oh, thank you.
And hello, Laurent.
Bonsoir.
Dear Thomas, couldn't hear anything at the beginning of the show. We tried. But for some reason, things were screwy. But it's very good to have you both here. And so what did you think? Who wants to start this off? Thomas, you want to start it off with Frank's poem?
Oh, Frank's done a wonderful job on this one. It moves so smoothly and wraps you in all sorts of wonderful thoughts as he does his charming best with her beauty and his soul weakness and her luscious lips, his back can't talk, and her luscious lips, his desire. He is the exotic fantasy of carnal dreams and wicked temptation. It's just great stuff. He just moves you so smoothly through the whole thing that he wraps you in this luscious dream and does it in that soft, whispery voice. Beautifully done all the way through. Delightful.
Nice comment, Thomas. Nice comment. Narat, how about you?
Well, I thought for some reason it was going to be Smooth Criminal that he was copying. And then I started listening to it, and I thought I was listening to William Shatner doing Captain Kirk, because there were some similarities between the two. But as I fell into the piece, I began to really enjoy it. He really has a unique way of doing things. So it was thoroughly enjoyable.
Right. Very good. Yeah, I think Frank did a nice job with this one. It's funny, we're doing Halloween pieces tonight, and he's got a sensual one, so I'm not sure, but okay. It works.
Well, you've heard of I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't call him a one-trick pony, because he's not.
No. Just the other poems on the board are Halloween poems, and he's got a sensual poem up. Last week, we were doing serious poems and sensual poems, and he had a Halloween poem up, so I'm saying. Frank, I think you did a good job with this, right? It was nicely done. The audio, as always, was nicely done. So, absolutely. Thanks for sharing with us tonight. Yeah, not sure when Greg's coming. I think he said about an hour. So, you're all stuck with me. That's the way it's going to be.
Did you say we're all stuck to you?
Stuck with me.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean,
better.
Like, hang up. Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll read this one. And, Laurent, are you going to run the comments or not?
Sure, honey.
Okie dokie.
Put him to work. Put him to work.
Well, you know. You got nothing else to do tonight, right? Right, Laurent?
I am free to be.
Oh,
who I wish.
Okay. This is good. I make everybody work, so I'll tell you. This piece is by Casey Day, and it's called Peekaboo. I cut a hole into the sky so you could peek through. Did you notice all the ways God separates dead from the living? How hard to know who's taking from who's giving. I painted 1,000 skies, but none of them would do. No, none were quite as beautiful as you. So I hope God doesn't mind that I borrowed his sky, because you know there was no other way to say what's on my brain. Oh, but I'm counting all the ways God separates the dead from the living. Maybe one day we'll paint one sky. Maybe one day we won't live or die. End poem.
Outstanding beats, really. Thomas, please start us off.
There's a charming, what's the right word to use here? Innocence, a childishness, you know, I've cut a hole into the sky so you could peek through. And yet at the same time, she takes on a really difficult subject, which is how do we deal with with those we love once they're dead? How do we talk to them and continue to hold them in our lives? But I love the, so I hope God doesn't mind that I borrowed his guy. That sense of, there's probably a good French word for it, but just that sense of innocence while maintaining a complex adultness at the same time. So that we come to those last two lines, maybe one day we'll paint one sky, and maybe one day we won't live or die, becomes just a torrent of philosophical possibilities. Beautifully done. Really, really great piece.
Thank you, Thomas. Great comment. I know it doesn't resemble it really, but for some reason, this reminded me of John Lennon's Imagine. I think when you talk about that childishness, the childish tone of a young person, perhaps naive, perhaps innocent, I always thought that Imagine had kind of that tone. Did you notice all the ways God separates dead from the living? Hard to know who's taking from giving. He sets the stanzas, she sets her stanzas up quite well. It's very engaging construction, very engaging language as well. Really thinking about an eternal theme, you know, life after death, living and dying, and why God separates living from the dying. Why aren't we all one, alive all the time? I like the concept very, very much. Like the poem. How about you, Chief?
I did like the poem. It was great for brevity, I will say. I hadn't thought about it until Thomas had said about, you know, having like a childlike quality in the beginning. You know, a child who's lost someone close to them. I could imagine them saying, you know, cut a hole in the sky so you could peek through. But then it turns and it takes on a more mature concept. I think that, excuse me, you wonder, I'm counting all the ways God separates the dead from the living. Maybe one day we'll paint one sky. Maybe one day we won't live or die. You know, it's almost a sense of what's to come, you know. I mean, it's pretty amazing, pretty amazing. And I know she wrote this for Pam's contest on Earthy. I think it's Earthy. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it. And then she re-entered it in our November 1st contest. Well, Lou's November 1st contest for remembering your loved ones, you know. And I think that it fits both sides, definitely. So nice job, Casey, and thanks for sharing. Absolutely. Okay. Let me see. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Okay, I didn't use that one. Well, Laurent, I'm going to have you read this one.
All right. Which one would that be?
Well, it's the one I just put on.
This is called Not Even a Goddamn T-Shirt.
Mm-hmm.
By Deaf Poet. It was a massive coronary. That's what they said. I just stood in the corner, annoyed I was dead. I crossed my arms, waiting for an ethereal light. But it never came. Nope. Not a dead relative in sight. That's not a utopia. It's a flick of a switch. There's nothing. Not a damn thing. That's the real bitch. At first, I was irate, then just fucking disappointed. My body on the floor twitched and contorted. A current hit once, again once more. Death and life exploded with a crack. One paramedic said with a grin, "All right, we got him back." Now I lay in intensive care, full of tubes and hurt. I went to the afterlife and didn't even get a goddamn T-shirt. Excuse me. End poem. That is downright cute. I love that one. Gene, how about if we get a comment from you first?
Well, you know, when I read it, I went, okay. And I thought it was a little odd because you put this in on Tuesday's show for the Day of the Dead. And I was like, I couldn't draw myself away from it because I got exactly where it was coming from. And I said, well, kind of it fits, you know, in a strange sort of way. But it was very well done. I thought that it was just well stated. And, I mean, I don't know, but when I got to that last line, I couldn't help but laugh. I was like, okay, you know, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Poor guy didn't even get the T-shirt. That's sad. That's sad. But, yeah, definitely a well-written piece. So, you know, I don't know, just good stuff.
Nice comment, Gene. Thank you. And Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like the voice of this one. It's matter of fact, slightly annoyed. It grouses. It doesn't whine. You know, I just stood in the corner annoyed I was dead. I crossed my arms waiting. You know, it's like you're dealing with somebody who knows what's supposed to happen, and it's kind of like, well, it's not happening. What's going on here? So when you hit that, at first I was irate, then just fucking disappointed. That was just a great line. Like, you know, where's heaven? Where's the Golden Gates? Where's all the music? Where's the white light? You know. It's just nothing? Oh, come on. By the time you get to that last line, it's so deadpan, and you're so set up for it that it grabs you, and whether you want to or not, forces you to laugh. Very, very well done.
Nice. Just comment, Tom. Laurent, are you with us?
Yeah, I was just on mute. I had to get off mute. So I was a chuckler. Mm-hmm. I was laughing. It says an immediate appeal. You know, the central core of our transient existence reduced cleverly to a T-shirt or a lack of a T-shirt. Really, the perspective on this, the tone on this was absolutely entrancing. I really liked it, and the use of Thomas's use of the word deadpan was right on. Great piece.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, Thomas, now I have one for you, and here we go. It's by Peter Salway.
Okay, I'm muted, so you'll hear me. much loved. All vile with soil, ash to cough and gargle. Oh, to call. The dearly departed, found in the attic, little left to love, stench bereft above. Siblings to profit, trash to the tip, gulls on the lake. Plastic to rip, preacher on Dale, crying, all brethren, not resigned to come posted oblivion. Rejoice in what's left of, well, contact sports, picnics with prostitutes, dogs of devotion, sagas of complex living, pink nipples, Viking kings, on the Seine again. Apartments and oceans, song of the sirens, plated women, all mine. All winds to whisper, conspire together, if in hinted semaphore, come closer. Much loved they were, brother and sister, by both father and mother, but bad parents sold little Lucifer to slave traders, securing retirement. Another sermon altogether, late night confessions, orphan with dementia, scrabble without another, when sleep goes wrong, dreams don't come, cliffs of ancient wonder, field of wild, abundant flowers to count, shaved by oriental mowers. Love of letters and painters, trim edges, free of polished masters, real font of Cezanne, textures. Toulouse was his mortal name, died in Paris, absence poisoned, earth collected, stench contained. Sunset, pastel lovely eye cast, the gods with top hat off, bending beard and scalp. Coffin do not drop, ropes not perish nor snap, gentle unto dank earth. Bones of the modern, Mona in Louvre, vacuum of dank, dark basement, all gone, still with French questions, God's commercials, absent as physics elemental. Flat screen totem, where are we going? Censorship one, mind of the mankind fence, from whence we come. But some dinosaurs to return some sunny day, no more anyone anyway. Inarticulate ferns, not even knowing they are green, uncoiling, blessing basic hydrogen, son of arrogance, always to eternal burn. Pimpled scientists disputing, not in our lived lifetimes, art of knowing swept away by oceans to come. End poem.
Nice job, Thomas.
Damn straight, it was a nice job. Not an easy poem necessarily to read.
No.
I look at this and I feel compelled to say, Tom, why don't you start us off?
That's cold and cool.
Sorry, brother.
There's really actually a whole lot packed into here. It's just that it's almost as if you're seeing one of those constantly changing scenes where you get a strobe light flashing at just the right pace, so everything sort of stops for a moment, and then when it flashes again, you have a new scene, and they come at you fast, and it's sometimes hard to see immediately what direction he's taking or where he's going, and yet it comes off with this horrible sense of the whole dance around death, the whole dance around the way we deal with people dying, preacher on day out, crying all bedroom, not resigned to composted oblivion, rejoice in what's left of flash, you know, and it then, you know, the dancing back to the Viking King, the promise of what might be in the hereafter, if there is any hereafter, how the people who, once you've died, deal with it. Much loved they were, brother and sister, by both mother, father and mother, but bad parents, you know. The reflections off of things so that you come out with this feeling that life is chaos. And for all of our efforts to make sense out of it and create art around it, the dead and the dying, the constant changing makes it impossible to maintain any stability or any real direction. At least that's my take. Your turn, Laura.
No, that wasn't bad. I wasn't too far off from what you were thinking about, but, you know, aside from the visions of death, and some of the things in here were really delivered with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, especially the second and third stanzas. The dearly departed found in the attic, the left love stench bereft above, siblings to profit, trash to the tip, those on the take, plastic to rip. But after a while, he moved into a lot of French allusions, rattling off some very well-known painters, Cézanne, Toulouse, Degas, and even the Bones of the Moderne, Mona in the Louvre, Vacuum of Dank, Dark Basement. And he began to talk of the exposure of life as art, almost, if I'm not mistaken. The way they died, the way we live, there's a strong contrast between the two. God's commercial, absent as physics elemental, flat screen totems, where are we going? Censorship one, man of mankind, mind of mankind, fence, from whence we come. Now he begins to ask again some of the eternal questions about life and living. And what you said about, I don't know, did you mention a certain chaos, the chaos of life? I can sense that as well, because he was all over the place, but very specifically all over the place. It certainly merits a second reading, but I thought it was fascinating. But from the way you were reading it, I figured, oh, he understands this right off the bat, which is why I wanted to start with you. That was good. Was very nice. Gene, what did you think?
I thought it was a whole lot of stuff coming from a whole lot of directions. This piece as well was written for the Day of the Dead. And I thought it was kind of interesting because it wasn't really a tribute to any one specific person. I kind of felt that it was like a tip of the hat almost to a group of people. But I couldn't quite put my finger on that because there was just so much going on. But I thought it was well written. It was clever. You know, credit for that, definitely. So nice work, Peter, and thanks for sharing with us all. Nice job. Yeah, it's a whole lot for my little brain to catch up with. But more power to you guys.
Any size brain, let me tell you.
Well, I really think he was focused on things that we love that have passed away and how they passed away. But I just can't,
right.
I just can't pull it all together into one cohesive whole, if you will.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I could get X number of stanzas and go that direction, and then some of them just kind of threw me a little bit. And, if I was Peter, I guess I would know what he did. But I'm not sure what those few stanzas. There weren't a whole lot of them, but there was enough of them to send a little confusion going through me. But that's because I'm me, you know. That's the way I look at it. But it was nicely done. Okay, I'm going to try and read the next one. If I can get my voice. And check the phone first. Make sure nobody's sitting there waiting. And this one is called Sorrow of the Siren Song by Victoria Frost. Within this sea of bones, your headstone sits as a beacon, guiding me to my darkest days as I lay unwillingly to be moved off course. Into the gaping maw of jagged rocks, waiting to rip one more hole in my soul and tether my remains to the rough curve of your grave, dragging me down into the cold, sunken depths where only the burning in my lungs keep me warm, the inky black leaving me directionless, and I sink further into this growing abyss, focusing only on the beat of my heart, sluggishly pumping blood through hopeless veins to drown out the whispers of your song, a promise. Just exhale and inhale you. Sink into your kiss. Give myself willingly as you drink me down. And I am lost, buried deep in the depths of my memory of you. Adding my bones to this growing sea. When your headstone, my beacon of home, and my story scrawled on unforgiving rock, of succumbing to your siren song and the poem.
Well read, Jean. Thank you. Imagine a siren sorrowing for someone who is dead. She can't fulfill her prime function, luring the man into his doom. Yet she occupies that same space. She pines for the loss of the loved one. She can't complete what she wants to complete, be who she wants to be. She's frozen with a tortured affection, if you will, that has no resolution whatsoever. She can only, as she says, adding my bones to this growing sea, with your headstone my beacon of home, and my story scrawled on an unforgiving rock of succumbing to your siren song. I took it that she was the siren, but that he played that role himself. I don't know, maybe I turned it around, but by looking at the title, Sorrow of the Siren Song, I really thought the siren was telling the story, and she was bedeviled by the exact reverse of what she was and what sirens do. Yet now that I'm reading it for a second time, I'm doubting myself completely. Thomas, how did you interpret this?
I can see totally why. You know, you see it one way, then you see it the other, because I did kind of the same thing. I had to go back and reread it right after we hit that last line, because I was like, wait a second, did I just miss everything? And
yeah, exactly.
I got the feeling that it's like, you know, this is the guy. It is this sense of wanting so much to meet the creator of that song, to be part of whatever is going on, focusing only on the beat of my heart, sluggishly pumping blood through hopeless veins, to drown out the whispers of your song, a promise, just exhale and inhale you. That's when I finally decided, yeah, it's the guy talking about how the siren song just drove him to the point where he has no peace, even in death. He is endlessly waiting to meet the creator of that song. You know, and I'm lost. I'm buried deep in the depths of my memory of you. It's a striking piece. Well told.
You're right about that. It was well told. And Victoria has that talent. Jean, your comment?
You know, I have to kind of agree with Thomas, and I agree with you, because I was going both directions as well as I read it. I'm like, okay, are we the siren or are we someone listening to the siren? Because it had me a little confused there for a little while. But I think that's just, I don't know, maybe a ploy or a play in what Victoria has done here. But I thought it was very well written in the respect that she really had you feeling the emotions. That's what they were really well expressed in this. And that I enjoyed. And I thought she did a beautiful job, you know, in that respect. So, wonderful job, Victoria. Thank you for sharing. Okay. And let me find another poem. Okay, the next one I have has a sound clip. So this one is by Martha Gill. So let me put this up. And here we go.
A Wrecking Ball by Martha Gill. It was my ear you whispered into, but it was my heart that was listening to you. It was not my lips you kissed, you know, darling, you kiss my soul. You went deeper in my heart than it's ever been, and I won't be looking for love again. You have got me wrapped up tight in your love tonight. You took a wrecking ball to my heart. Baby, you tore it all apart. Then you made my heart your home, and I will never, ever roam. 'Cause you wrote your name on my heart, and darling, I knew it from the start. The first time I looked in your eyes, baby, I swear, I saw paradise. You took a wrecking ball to my heart. Baby, you tore it all apart. Then you made my heart your home, and I will never, ever roam. My love is peeking round the corner. My heart and only yours for sure. And love meets me in the hall as my heart hears your heart's call.
Well, Martha, thank you for that SoundCloud. That was very well done. There are elements of this that remind me of the quintessential country and western song, especially the lines, "You took a wrecking ball to my heart, babe, you tore it all apart." It's an image that is that somehow fits a country and western song. Perhaps I'm wrong, but that's just my take. Tom, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I always admire her willingness to sing and present us with these lyrical poetic efforts. I don't know if I'd have the courage to do that. In fact, I know I wouldn't. I couldn't do it. So I'm always impressed that she can. But in terms of this piece, it has a nice sort of country humor to it that fits into a country and western style song. I love some of the images besides the chorus, "Took a wrecking ball to my heart." 'Cause you wrote my name on your heart, and darling, I knew it from the start. Or it was in my ear you whispered into, but it was my heart that was listening to you. I mean, those are great country lines. It's a really sharp piece with just that edge of humor to it that in many ways lets it all work, because it takes what otherwise would be just a love song and makes it something special and makes it something that you kind of remember as you hear the chorus running back through your head after she hits that last verse. Very well done.
I do agree with you and Jean.
Well, I think Martha did a great job with it, actually. She got her point across very well. And, I like the fact that I don't know how she's brave enough to just go ahead and sing like that. But then again, she sings better than I do, so maybe that's the answer. I could never do that. I'd be
better than me, too.
I'd be like, you know me. I wouldn't be doing that, Laurent. So I give her big kudos on that one. But a clever piece and nicely written. So good for her. She was lyrical, and that's the thing right there.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, you put a guitar to that.
Yep, exactly.
A little bit of auto tune, and that's a hit.
Absolutely. I hear you. I absolutely am not arguing that. I'm just not that brave. And when I hear her sing, I say, "You go, girl." You know, I mean, she's got the tune. She's got a tune figured out, and she sings it. And I give her kudos on that. Most definitely.
Yeah.
So, next one. Let me see. Back to me, I guess it is.
You know. Yeah, it's all on your shoulder.
On my shoulders. I wonder if I'm so damn tired. I'm dragging all this stuff around with me.
Yeah, you can carry all of it.
Well, only with help from my friends do I carry all of it, honestly. Okay, Laurent. Absolutely. Okay. Laurent, this one's on you.
Katrina the Doll Lady. Ooh, I don't think this comes out well. By Lou McFay. Every year, just before Halloween, the village curse returns. A female child will be taken away because it's the young flesh she prefers. She turns a girl inside her home. She lures a girl inside her home, enticing her with poisoned sweetbread. Her skin is then carefully removed with Katrina's knives, needle, and thread. Old bones laying chest-deep in the basement, ready to be fashioned into a doll frame. The girl's skin is then removed as a new doll appears with a new name. She sells her wares down the road, hoping she'll be a tourist trap. These dolls bring me such youthful joy. Here's one. You want it gift wrapped? Beware this town if you come around. Katrina returns this time each year. She needs another doll to sell. Keep young girls away from here. End poem. Oh, this is dark. This is dark. We have a deadly seamstress. Wow.
This has definitely mastered the whole venue of creepy. lures a girl inside her home, enticing her with poisoned sweetbread. Her skin is then carefully removed with Katrina's knives and needle and thread. The whole thing, piece by piece, that we put it all together, and then the obscenity of selling it in the hopes of creating a gift, what do you call it, a tourist trap. It's both frightening and creepy and gross all at once. It's good horror.
Yeah, she's managed to commercialize murder. The village curse is an interesting way to take it, because it assumes that throughout the year there's no issue, but let this time of year come around, and, village curse returns. And I love her phrasing, old bones laying chest deep in the basement, ready to be fashioned into a doll frame. The girl's skin is then removed as a new doll appears with a new name. Well, I mean, just the concept of doing that is kind of chilling, kind of frightening. But she handles it well. You know, she maintains a very nice sense of aplomb, of balance when she writes this. And again, there is a little bit of humor in there that leavens the horror and turns it into an appealing piece. Jean, did you enjoy this?
It was dark, and I believe the word creepy passed through someone's lips. Most definitely. But it was a great Halloween piece. But, you know, I'm reading some of Lou's responses to his commenters, and it makes me a little, I don't know, based on a loose tale about a woman who took the skin off young girls and put them on dolls. So this is supposed to be some type of based on a true story kind of thing. Like, oof. Yeah. Oof. That's awful. That's just awful. But, you know, I'll be okay with it. Nice job, Lou. That's what I can say. It was well written. And it was a great piece for Halloween, that's for sure. Creepy and dark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, hit all the notes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Thomas, I have one for you.
Oh, goody.
By Old Sarge 5.
Okay. Haunted. She keeps walking down the halls of my mind, opening doors and pulling out things she left behind. She's so beautiful in her white silk and lace. The glow of love sweetly rests on her face. I am constantly reliving the day that she turned and slowly walked away. If she couldn't stand to stay with me, why must she haunt my memory? I wonder if I will ever be free. One can't keep these feelings under lock and key. There is no way on earth to run away from the walk that she takes so many times a day. I wonder if she ever stirs up her memory. Do I haunt her like she does me? Was it really that easy to leave me behind? Am I completely out of her mind? If she really doesn't want me, why must she continually haunt me? Are they not enough tears I have cried over the romance that has died? He keeps walking down the halls of my mind, opening doors and pulling out things she left behind. If she couldn't stand to stay with me, why must she haunt my memory?
Nice read, Thomas. Well done. This is a very interesting piece. She haunts his memory, which is normally a product of the individual being haunted. It's self-imposed. And yet in this poem, it's like the haunting is an outside agency that still lives somehow and makes sure that she bedevils his memory. So he's personifying, if you will, that ghost-like figure who inhabits his memory and won't let him alone, won't grant him peace, which is a very interesting and a novel way of looking at the way people think and are bedeviled by their memory, by some of the things that happened in the past they can't shake, always seeing the person who passed and everything they did, not passed perhaps, but left, I'm not sure. But I enjoyed the way she manipulates the reader a little bit into something a little bit darker, perhaps, than it might otherwise be. What did you think, Jean?
You know, I thought this was a good piece. I thought it was clever in the respect that, you know, that, let me think how, because I was trying to put my thoughts into words for the comment, you know, in writing. You know, this person is being haunted by this memory that just doesn't give him the peace that he looks for whatever reason. And it seems like he's haunted in two ways. You know, one by the spirit of this person and one by the memories lost, in my mind anyway. But I thought it was a well-penned piece and it was, you know, it was a good job, really a good job. I wish I could come up with more off the top of my head, but, you know, right now I'm trying to get my words together, so.
Well, that's all right. That's why we have Tom with us. Tom, your comment?
I'm going to just sit in the sun and glow over that compliment. Thank you ever so much. I can just feel the honey and the butter just melting in my mouth. Anyway. This has got a certain sort of a comforty whale of a tale to it. I mean, I love it. She's walking down the halls of my mind, opening doors and pulling out things she left behind. She's so beautiful in her white silken lace. The glow of love sweetly rests on her face. I mean, that opening stanza makes it sound like you're going to be getting a great, wonderful kind of, I remember this wonderful woman. And then he turns it so beautifully in the next verse, and because he ends with, why must she haunt my memory? And then the bitterness of, I wonder if I ever stir up her memory. Do I haunt her like she does me? Was it really that easy to leave me behind? Am I completely out of her mind? You know, this, you know, As if we were going to modernize it and make it really in the 90s, we need some closure here. But there's just a certain level of humor in this, as if almost there's another person standing outside and sort of laughing about how stupid all this is. But it goes on anyway because sometimes you just can't let go.
Amen to that. All right, Gene, back to you.
Okay, guys, I'm going to put the next one up, and I'm going to read this one.
Okay.
This one's by Magic. It's The Ghost of Me by Magic Light. There it rested on its own, upon its trestled stand, and not a single sinner here within this hallowed land. The chapel cold and empty, all that stirred a candle flame. An eeriness enveloped all, I thought I heard my name. The coffin's solemn single rose, fell quietly to the floor. From kneeling, I then stood upright, I heard that call once more. The candle flame extinguished now, as if through human breath. My reasoning, it reassures, there's no need to fear death. Exhaling slowly, I approached and gazed with focused eyes. That wooden box all dressed in brass did slowly start to rise. My breath escaped in misty clouds, a chill ran through each bone. I knew that I was by myself, yet I was not alone. The coffin rose to face me as I gripped the wooden pew, and suddenly all candles lit, 1,000, maybe 2. It stopped abruptly as I neared, descending on the aisle. My every nerve was shattered, standing frozen for a while. I watched the lid slide open, as if to draw me near. Unconsciously, I then approached through bravery or fear. And as I neared the coffin, each movement laced with stealth, I recognized that silent corpse and looking at myself. End poem.
Great read, Gene.
No, that was well done. Well done.
I really like this particular piece. Mm-hmm. It's not a new theme. The act of discovering that you have died without realizing it and you're observing what's going on. Yet this is handled with some really clever rhymes and a perspective that pretty much convinces the reader, it certainly did me, that there was something going on, a haunting of some kind, but then to have it completely reversed and find out that you're looking at yourself, that you're the one who's dead, was a really nice take on, again, what I called not an uncommon theme, yet one that's handled extremely well. You got to be careful when you do the kind of thing, because the ending can fall flat if you don't handle it. But I thought that he handled the ending really, really well. And as I near the coffin, each movement laced with stealth. You know, he puts his character in motion, in action, and all of a sudden, it's at that moment that he realizes that silent corpse is really himself that he's looking at. I like this a lot. Tom, how about you?
Yeah, there's a Poe-like quality to this. I mean, you have the sense of someone being at a funeral or a memorial service. There rested on its own upon its trestled stand, and not a single sinner here within this hallowed land, the chapel cold and empty, all that stirred a candle flame. And eeriness enveloped all. I thought I heard my name, and the development, the piece by piece, the little things going on that make you feel there's some level of horror here, and that they're coming, it's coming, and it's done really nicely. The little bits and pieces, sort of filling in all the questions, bit by bit, piece by piece, so you're not only willing to go along, you're drawn along with it. And I love the, because I thought it was really done well when he goes, the coffin rose to face me as I gripped the wooden pew, and suddenly all candles lit, 1,000, maybe 2. It stopped abruptly as I neared, descending on the aisle, my every nerve was shattered, standing frozen for a while. That was just a really, or next to last verse, just really nicely done. And I actually wasn't prepared, and they didn't telegraph you anything, because I was not prepared for the last line, I am looking at myself. And that, I thought, made it really good, because most people give it away before you get to it. And they never did. They built the horror and maintained it all the way up to the last line. Really well done.
You're right about that. Gene?
Well, I agree. I love this piece. We all know I like rhymers. So that right off the start gave me two thumbs up. But I enjoyed each one of these stanzas, and I really do think that he pulled up there goes my brain again. the drama in it, and I thought that it just each stanza just built upon the one before it, and it did. It led into that last stanza, which had a nice twist at the end. I mean, because you aren't necessarily expecting that. You're looking for something to jump out at him more so than him see himself. And I thought that, it was really a great job. So nice work, Magic Light. I think he had another poem once before that hit me kind of the same way. I was really impressed by it. And I don't remember what it was, but it was unique. And I think that this one was just as well done as the other. I have to think about what it was. I know I have it in my head somewhere written down. Things like that always stick with me. So let's see what I have for the next read. Okay, here we go. Okay. Well, the next one, next reader is you, Laurent. So I'm going to give you the next poem is John Nakapalo. So here we go.
Okay. This is called "You Told Me a House Could Be Haunted" by John Nakapalo. You told me a house could be haunted by years of abuse, every item calling up memories of pain. And worst of all, to see this, as others question why you are so sad, as if this place were a beautiful cage that others see with scornful envy. Every room a shadow womb you must cry from in daily, but friends and family still confused by your tears, not realizing the soul can starve in opulence. End poem. Tom, start us off, please.
With me?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is especially after you read the author's notes. A friend who still lives in a house she shared with her abusive ex-husband, a beautiful house with ugly memories. It really comes across in this this feeling that sometimes you might often be better turn away from all your riches, when it feels so bad, because I love that last line, not realizing the soul can starve in opulence. That was a real nice dagger at the very end. And very well done.
Thank you, Tom. I enjoyed the way he referred to the place as a beautiful cage that others see with scornful envy. And the whole question of a soul starving in opulence gives the truth to the observation that what is most important are not material things or a material place to live in. To be happy, normally you're going to have a relationship and a life that gives you the things that you want, not years of abuse that call up memories of pain, regardless of where you are. You can be sitting on an opulent chair in a beautiful room done with hangings, wall hangings, done with flowers, beautiful furniture, and it can be a place of hell, a place of pain, where you had to endure abuse. I think he communicates that exceptionally well. Tom?
I just did it.
I'm sorry. Gene?
I know, there's so many of us. I understand.
I know, it's hard to keep it all straight.
I know. I get turned with the less people I have, the more confused I get. I just find that to be humorous for me. I think you guys really had it well described. You know, I just put here haunted can be defined in different ways. You know, some people, you say the word haunted, they think of a ghost. You say the word haunted, they think of, you know, things moving around. But really, more people are probably haunted by horrible experience and memory. So I think they did a great job expressing that. So nice work, John. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing. Okay, Thomas, it brings me to you. And I'm going to put up a big spot.
Back to dum-dum-dum.
I'll get me started singing because I do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah.
A little sound of music, you know. Anyway, to get back in the mood of things, The Ghastly Hole of Halloween by Shakanosky. The ghastly goal of Halloween. Within the village, far from sight, there lurks a creature, black as night. A ghastly goal who's never seen until the night of Halloween. His blood-soaked garments foul the breath and fill the air with the stench of death. With scarlet eyes that glow like fire, it burned him alive on a funeral pyre. 'Twas on the night of Halloween in 1617. The village people took his life in the ancient ritual of sacrifice. An innocent man, a simple fool, a man who'd become the living goal. They said that he had cast such spells that he belonged in the depths of hell. But as they stood and watched him die, they heard a strange, unearthly cry. Cursed are ye who would see me burn. Revenge shall be mine when I return. And so, each year on Halloween, when all the ghosts and ghouls convene, he appears once more in the village square to haunt the people dwelling there. And all the people hide in fear, knowing that he'll soon be near, for every year upon this night, a living soul has died of fright. End poem.
Nice job on the read, Thomas.
It was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was well done.
Yeah.
Once again, we have an immortal theme. Not new, but exceptionally well handled. The classic AA, BB type of rhyming really lends itself to good storytelling. And this is a good story. The unjustly killed coming back to visit his revenge on the townsfolk once each year, mm-hmm. A living soul dying of fright. It's great poetic justice, isn't it? Gene, your comment?
Well, I think this was really well done. I think the story was great. The rhyme and meter was great. Just a very well done piece and very enjoyable. I mean, it was a great Halloween piece. So, you know, can't ask for much more than that. You know,
it's the kind of poem that is very satisfying, especially on Halloween.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gene. Thomas?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of these ones that captures sort of the mythic soul of what we want to hear, which is someone being unjustly tried for some crime they really don't deserve to be tried for, and being so wrongly cast into the bowels of hell they come back to share with us their hated spells. So, you know, and there's the right mix of revenge and insanity on the part of the crowd, and the fact that the revenge is sweet because he gets someone every year. A living soul has died of fright. I mean, good tale, good, well told. The rhyme works nicely with it. The meter's good. And the fact that they tell it with just enough sharpness of word usage that you don't, that you're pulled right on through the whole thing. Very well done.
Thank you, Thomas. And Gene, I can't imagine that when you read this, you didn't like it immediately.
I did like it. I did. I did like it.
I know, that's
what
I said.
Absolutely. Give me a rhyming poem. Cool. I love it. There's something about it. I think it's challenging because, you know, some people rhyme and they use words just to make the rhyme. And, you know, the real trick of rhyming poetry is to use the right words and you know, make it right, not just use something, you know, to fill in the gap. And I like when I see someone write rhyming poetry, and they do that. You know, they go that little bit of extra to make sure they're not just, you know, making it okay. You know, I'm tough like that sometimes. So anyhow.
Yeah, hard. That's huge. It's hard.
I'm sorry.
It shows,
you know,
all the time. You're really hard.
Yeah. I think
take
that,
no go.
You know, people say, oh, rhyming poetry. Rhyming poetry is not always easy. You know,
I don't think so.
Well, wait a second now. Wait. Rhyming poetry can be very easy. Good rhyming poetry, as you said, Gene, is not easy.
Well, I said it's not always easy. It's just not. I mean, sometimes it comes off as very juvenile. Sometimes it comes off as just kind of awkward. But, you know, when you get somebody who does the syllable and all that, it can really be something wonderful. And I love that. Yep, I do. Okay, I'm going to read the next one. So here we go. I know, don't all be excited. I'm reading another poem.
Oh, you sound real, that much fine.
I know.
We're ready.
This is called Cobweb House, by Figuring It All Out. There somebody is. October falls while lanterns lurk and streets are strewn with red. A man peers out into the murk, and not all ghosts are dead. A whisper rap upon the door, his eyes, they pull with fear, and children's voices shake his core. They've never been so near. His window view fills him with dread as figures mount the screen, and terror shrouds his weary head, for ghosts are never seen. A witch, a wolf, a homemade mouse swarm eerily to see the man who lives in Cobweb House, concealed behind the tree. The witch's eyes met his and locked, a moment frozen time. He tries to speak, reduced to mime. His voice crumbles like chalk. The children shriek in frightful glee. He looks just like they say. Triumphantly they turn and flee. The man is left in gray. November falls while young men work and bakers trade their bread. A man peers out into the murk as not all ghosts are dead. End poem.
Oh, I like this one a lot. You know, you talk about enjoying a rhyming poem. This is one of those rhyming poems that is very, very interesting because it reads out really well. Storytelling is exceptional, I think. And then there's a great hook in this piece. Not all ghosts are dead. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas?
I like it, I like the way it develops because at first you can't decide whether he's one of these people who just is frightened by anything and anything. And then as you go through and you capture the kids on, and you hear the kids on Halloween, and you hear what's going on, but really he has become a ghost of himself in so many ways that, you know, when you hit that last line, November falls while young men work and bakers trade their bread and a man peers out into the murk as novel ghosts are dead. That repeat of that last line from the last line, the first verse, suddenly now has so much more meaning. And that to me is when you know you've read a really good poem, when they're able to repeat a line and it suddenly just blossoms with all sorts of thoughts and ideas behind it that you never saw when the first time you hear it. And this one does that very, very well.
Absolutely. Aaron, are you on mute again?
Yeah, I was. Nice job, Thomas and Jane.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I like this poem a lot. Again, great rhyming poem. I love the tale that he told. So I just thought it was well done, and I very much enjoyed it. So thank you so much for sharing, figuring it all out. And when you figure it all out, would you just send me a few
Let us know.
Send me a letter and let me know. Yeah, right.
I could use all the help I can get. Okay.
I'm beyond reach.
Laurent, and the next one is on you.
Okay.
Oh, my God. There we go.
Let's see. Okay, this is called Love Gone Wrong by Den the Pen. I haven't read anything by him in a while. A real pleasure to read again, that is. Whispering silence on the hill, the old house still stands empty. In the deep, damp autumn chill, fallen leaves there are aplenty. Stars shine through a broken sky. Below them lies the dreamer. And with a pen her sorrow flies. A star falls like a streamer. So with that pen she starts to write a tale of deep, heart-wrenching woe. This will be her last good night, this letter so her love will know. You said you'd love me, then you took me. You said I was your living jewel, but that was before you cheated, turned me into love's poor fool. You cried and said that you still loved me, but you still lay with someone new. You were so sly that you got by me, so easy, but here's one to rue. I've got to go unless you start calling, or I might crawl right back to you. For now, I have your six-gun pistol. I'll take my life and curse yours too. You made me crazy with your lying. Oh, you're so cold, my life is through. Your name will be a curse on my lips, as I do now what I must do. That was the letter that he found there, among gore and brains spread on the ground. Oh, the horror that he saw there, his gun and her dead fingers wound. So he fell to his knees a-sobbing, put the gun to his own brain, a bullet for his life for robbing. She lacked the will to ease his pain, but lacked the will to ease his pain. In heavy tears, he dug her cold grave by the old house on the hill. Each day for him a guilty, sad day, as she rests there ever still. Even now, he thinks of that night, though it seems so long ago, in a house, a pulsing soft light. Could it be a restless soul? In his dreams, he hears her calling. He wakes to find there's no one there. And where autumn leaves are falling, it's her perfume in the air. It is now he hears her footsteps closer come. He senses doom. Now his door, it slowly opens as she glides into his room. No more now is she peaceful. No more now is she at rest. Horrible face, twisted and vengeful, stills the heart within his chest. Now the old house still stands haunted. and deathly silence on the hill. Condemned souls in horror flaunted, mournful lamentations haunted still. End poem.
Nice job, Laurent.
Yeah, wow. Thomas, start us off, please.
This is one of those old horror stories that completely depends upon the letter. And the letter is written beautifully. I like how they play so well with the idea of someone who loves and then treats it as if it has no meaning or purpose, but goes forth in these new conquests. And yet her love for him still runs so deep that she has to choose between being driven crazy by his behavior or death. And she chooses death and then haunts. And haunts him to the point where he dies from fear, or she squeezes his heart till it's still. I like how he doesn't tell you one way or the other. He just talks about the haunted old house on the hill. Really well done. Really, really well done. A good tale well told.
That's a good way of describing it, a good tale well told. I was right with you all the way through the letter, and you're right, that is the central core of the beginning, really. But to have him find her and fall to his knees sobbing, and even make an attempt, an abortive attempt at his own life, gave me pause. Because if he cheated on her, it shows, at least to me, that he didn't love her perhaps the way the poem described that he did. And that's an interesting thought. Can we love someone else briefly while we love the central person forever? There is that thing in us that makes us want to lie with someone else. I can understand that. It's one of the central appeals of our humanity, if you will, the desire to be close and to engage sexually with somebody else. But the question remains, does that make our love for somebody else less than it might be? Or does it almost reinforce it in some way? It's an interesting thought. I will always stay with you, but I require something else. And it's not something else that can't be given. But you know what? It doesn't matter, because women don't play that shit. They do not like that. And they will absolutely emasculate you, whether it be physically in real life or from the grave, which this one does. I enjoy this piece a lot. Thomas, your thoughts?
I just shared them with you, Laurent. Gotta call in Jean. Quit forgetting that she's there.
No, I don't forget that she's there. I just know that she likes to go last.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Thomas, it's a tale well told. You can't take that away from it. I mean, it definitely was well written and well. I don't want to say well expressed, just well penned. And I thought he did a great job. Absolutely. In his dreams he hears her calling. He wakes to find there's no one there. And when autumn's leaves are falling, it's her perfume in the air. It's a great tale, and it carries that haunting note, which is what the contest was, giving the best haunting in her story. And I think he met that head on and did a wonderful job. So that's what I have to say about that.
So there.
Okay. That's right. So there. Damn, I have one sitting here for Thomas. Because I lost it. Okay. Hang on, I go back over and grab it again.
You're coming.
I got it. And then I'm going to read one, and then you guys are going to read your piece.
Okay,
Thomas. This is one, Tiger.
Okay. A lifetime Spence, Not Quite Dead by White Tiger. Crackling bone white paint falls off slats attached to redwood stakes which stab the hollowed ground with picket fences that surround morbid gardens full of marble heads. Close to town, where asphalt ends, a gravel road trickles past a rusted gate with trusted locks that open not for passing guests. Yet some slip by unseen. They wander in and out from time to take in scenes or find a local haunt, seeking thrills from those who still can breathe. The air is so cold, a winter breeze could blow through coats and thatch freeze skin, but wrath, already frozen, will not feel these things again. Floating ghost, near comatose, like imps condemned to hell, limp and lifeless, not quite dead. Their makers cursed them well. Zombies without bodies trapped between both high and low, wait to be waded in for sins, disease, which way they'll go. End point.
Nicely read, Thomas. This is a great piece. I love the imagery and I love the storyline in this. Floating ghosts near comatose, like imps condemned to hell, limp and lifeless, not quite dead. Their maker cursed them well. You know, the idea of the dead waiting for judgment, not having judgment passed on them immediately, but having to wait for it in some kind of space where nothing moves and you can remain in for years and years. Interesting concept, but I very much like the way it was written. It's, everything is phrased very, very well, and it poses that interesting question. Are we judged, and if so, when? Nicely done. All right, Gene, I'm going to put you second. Could you comment, please?
Absolutely. I thought that this was a well-done piece. I thought it met the challenge of the contest very well. You know, give me your best haunting, and I think that they did that for sure. It was original for certain. You know, it went from the picket fences and, you know, the cemetery, and there was a lot going on in it as well, different things. You know, you had the rays and you had the ghosts and you had the zombies and you had all that going on, so it must be Halloween, that's what I gotta say. But, yeah, nice job, definitely. So thank you, White Tiger, for sharing
with
us all.
Thomas, I was struck by the lines, they wander in and out from time to time to take in scenes or find a local haunt, seeking thrills from those who still can breathe. I found the concept of seeking thrills from those who still can breathe a fascinating one. What did you think about that?
Yeah. Well, to me, I've been watching on BBC the British comedy Ghosts, which has now been picked up and Americanized by CBS. And the haunts there are desperate for something new and different because all they can do is repeat what's already gone in their lives. And after 200 or 300 years, your life has been told once too often, gets boring, even not only to you, but to all the other ghosts about you. and this captures some of that, but he does it with a much better sense of the sense of emptiness, the sense of desperation to just have somebody decide we're going to die, we're going to move on, or we're going to go down, or we're going to go up, but anything's better than this constant waiting for someone's judgment. I love the business about the air so cold, a winter breeze can blow through coats and flash freeze skin, but rats already frozen will not feel these things again. I mean, the whole, he just sets the tone so lovely. Even that second stanza where he describes where the graveyard is, you know, close to town where asphalt ends, a gravel road trickles past, a rusted gate with trusted lock that opens not for passing guests, yet some slip by unseen. When I was reading it, I just could feel that just setting the whole scene really nicely. This is just well done from start to finish.
Yes, it is. All right, Gene, that brings us to the next piece.
You're bringing us back to me. Yeah, the concept. There we go. Okay, the next piece. Don't get me started. I'm tired, so it's easy to make me giggle. Here we go. This is called Clawing Silence by Iris 3. The paintings dropped on spiraling staircases in the creaking oak. Eager for adventure, Emily's travels took her to an old haunted castle of Rosewood. Midnight. Clocks chimed, ringing painfully on Emily's eardrum. Trill owl hoots circling shadows of poison ivy. Shadows gallivanting across her bedroom. Cream walls stained suddenly with parched blood drops. A faint cry. Pounding heartbeats. Emily getting up from her bed. Locked hastily her bedroom floor. On mahogany carved bed lay spotless sheets. Suddenly soaked in black phantoms. Ferociously hammering nails in her door. Her sable locks swept in icy winds. She abruptly turns back, feeling on her porcelain neck two shriveled fingers clutching her. End of poem.
Well, that doesn't send a little chill up your back. I don't know what will. I can't imagine the feeling of terror that must run through you when you feel fingers, disembodied fingers, clutching at your neck. It might send you spiraling into a kind of madness, which she was beginning to experience towards the end, ferociously hammering nails on her door, the sable locks swept in the icy winds. It had a very atmospheric poem. I like the way it's constructed. I like the way the story was told. How about you, Thomas?
Yeah, I do too. I mean, in the midnight, clocks chimed, ringing painfully on Emily's eardrums, shrill owl hoots, circling shadows of poison ivy, shadows gallivanting across her bedroom, cream wall stained suddenly with parched blood drops. I mean, you know, just nice horror from start to finish. A little bit of gruesome, but the thrill chill is really in that last two lines, two shriveled fingers clutching her. Ooh, goosebumps. Great stuff.
Thank you, Thomas. Jean?
Okay. Well, hang on, because I had myself someplace I had no business being. Okay. Okay, Laurent, you're up.
I don't know if you guys remember that book that was so popular back in the 70s, so long ago, The Secret Life of Plants. Well, as a cat fancier, as an admirer of the feline species, I've always been fascinated with the secret life of cats. And this is one such, called Far Better Than the Mouse. Stretched out upon her side, house cat, smiling in the sun, deck is warm, enemy routed, now her day is done. Cat's day began at dawn, exiting by her door. Garden is the point for morning's scratch and claw. Lighter, dashing here and there, feline with nary a care. a smell that halts her in her tracks, causes nose to flare. She holds it in her mouth, a scent she won't forget, left by an intruder, some cat she hasn't met. Backyard is inviolate. She pisses out a warning. No clearer sign or message could be more informing. Stay out, stay out, or I'll claw your ears to shreds and leave you for the mice more than halfway dead. Well, old Tom smelled the script and decided to stay away. He had better things to do than see affairs gang after glay. Stealthy stalk, a robin scared, it fluttered off in haste. A mouse fell victim to her claws. She let nothing go to waste. But now it was time for salmon treat. So in she came, without shame, her humans to entreat. Pate dish was scrumptious, far better than the mouse, then slept outstretched upon the deck that faced the sun-filled south. End poem.
Nice job, Ron. Thomas, you want to start us off?
Well, you catch nicely the arrogance of a cat. That sense that they own the world and can tell anybody and everybody what to do and when to do it. And, you know, and take advantage of anything that happens to come by that strikes their fancy. I like you how you caught that sense of the smile, the sense of warmth on the deck. It was delightfully done from start to finish. A real purr.
Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah, Laurent, I think this was really well done. Like Thomas said, you know, you captured so many wonderful points throughout, you know. You know, that last stanza when you're talking about, you know, that face the sun-filled south. I mean, that was a wonderful. You almost feel the sun, like, in your body, because, you know, you're following through with it. I mean, you know, the stalking of a robin, you know, the capture of the robin, you know, but just definitely really an excellent piece. You know, I've seen a couple of them you've done about cats, and I think you've totally captured them. I guess that's because you have a couple. Makes a difference, you know.
Meow.
It's his own basically Indian nature.
You hear him over there meowing. God, I know. Next thing you know, he'll be purring. But no, it's excellent. It really is. I love the detail in it. So definitely an excellent job. Thomas, I've got yours to put up next. Oh, Laura, would you like to comment on your piece?
Say again, please.
Yes, if you wanted to comment on your piece. Trying to be fun.
Oh, anyway. You succeeded. I laughed.
Barely. You almost didn't. Okay, Thomas, your piece is now up.
Okay. This is not very Halloween-y, but it's fun. Learning to fly. This caramelized night, heat drags the sweat across my skin, moonlight catching me like cloth on thorns. You waited in this circling heat, a smile crashing through me. We touched, our molecules exchanged messages. We understood, resolved a silence, created clarity, made us know oneness. We faced understanding. Everything here was forever. Giggles effervesced from our souls. We drew love poems in each other's sweat, touched foreheads, lips, fingers hid in the caverns of your long hair. I could taste the dancing electrolytes, thrill my throat, my head spun, dizzy with the earth, rooting my feet in its deep, heated magma energies. Hands, fine-boned, rough-hued, creating tangos to express our heated chemistry. 17, seeing this ethnocentric ocean dwindle to a puddle, as our every cell tells us, love makes us greater than everything dreamed. We only need each other.
Mm-hmm.
Impulse.
Nice job.
That was nice. We touched our molecules, exchanged messages. We understood, resolved silence, created clarity, made us know oneness. We faced understanding. That's a very pregnant statement. We faced understanding, as if understanding was a challenge, a difficult one. And I guess it is. But when you have this kind of relationship, when everything clicks, when everything you feel is forever, and you draw love poems in each other's sweat, and lips, fingers hid in the caverns of your long hair, beautifully written. I love the sense that if we have each other, we need nothing else. I thought that came through very, very strongly. But, Gene, what did you think?
Well, Thomas, I love how you led into this piece. This caramelized night, he drags the sweat across my skin, moonlight catching me like cloth on thorns. You waited in the circling heat, a smile crashing through me. We touched our molecules, exchanged messages. We understood, resolved silence, created clarity, made us one, made us know oneness. That whole piece right there, like, you know, really, the rest is just gravy, you know? It was just well done. I think that was a wonderful way to lead into it and to, you know, the rest, like I say, when I say it's all gravy, it's just, that's the meat of the piece right there, I believe. And the rest of it is just embellishment, you know? But it was very, very well written. So nice work. I appreciate that share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well,
I know.
Are you on mute?
No, it's just a good turn. Something.
Yeah, now you got to
expose
yourself.
Right? Okay. Well, I'm not sure who's doing what now.
You're picking out the next poem.
Okay.
For you to read.
That's what I needed to know, I guess. Thomas, would you like to comment on your poem? What am I saying?
The only thing to say is sort of to read what's at the bottom in the author's notes. I don't know whether to dedicate this to God's little girl or blame it on Trina, but in any case, it should make her and Mel smile. Rohina could be blamed because I'm telling her the story of my first love. Anyway, this poem gets at all of that. What else is it to say? I write a good poem. I always feel the best thing to do is blame it on everybody else. Not my fault.
Yeah, that's the answer. Well, am I supposed to read the next one? I am.
Yeah. It's all on your shoulders again.
Let me see if I can find a girly piece. I don't know. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. It's hard to get good help these days. I know what I'll do. Hang on. I got something. All right, let's think. Somewhere. Maybe I can't. I don't know where it is, so I can't do that one.
Are you getting beat up by poetry, huh?
I think I can.
Well, no, smart ass. But I have another sound set, but I don't have the poem link, so I can't do anything with it. You know, I'm not going searching it up because it could be anywhere. Okay, so let me put this next piece up.
Okay, put that next piece up.
Well, Meeting My Ghost by Garanwick. That's the way to pronounce that. And here we go. Meeting My Ghost by Garanwick. They said the old house... Wait a minute. Oh, okay. I got nervous. but I already read this. They said the old house was haunted. I wondered if the story was true. I saw the look on their faces when I asked by who. They gave me a right smile and pointed at the statue that stood on the hill. They laughed at my question, "Who's he?" They said, "Knock on the door and you'll see." So I did. I was shocked that the ghost who answered was me. Ooh, and poem.
This gives us that familiar twist again. You know, you look at a body in a coffin and it's you who's dead. You knock on the door and the person answers, "The ghost was me." It's well handled. It's a nice little brevity. And it's up front, meeting my ghost. Couldn't be any clearer, any plainer. And I think it's one of the things I really like about it. Thomas, how about you?
I like that center stanza. They gave a wry smile and pointed at the statue that stood on the hill. They laughed at my question, "Who's he?" I mean, you know, because he sets you up nicely by doing that, as if almost by becoming a ghost, we lose enough contact with the reality of the world of living that we don't see all things clearly. He said, "Knock on the door and you'll see." So I did, and was shocked that the ghost who answered was me. It's got that delightful sense of the sort of duality of the living and the dying, the sense of being a spirit wandering at the same time having a place. There's some neat little things tied into this that make it an interesting rite. Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Thomas. Jean?
Okay. Well, I liked it. I thought it was well done. Absolutely. It was a great brevity. In fact, I was surprised that they got all that in such a short piece. You know, because sometimes you need that beginning and then that build up and then that twist at the end. But it was well done. For being as short as it was, I'm impressed. Okay. So, Laurent, that brings me to you, if you do not mind.
I thought all roads led to Rome, not to me.
Well, they don't all lead to you. They all lead to me somehow. That's why I keep going. Me again? Is it me again? Yeah. No.
All right.
Okay.
This is called The Ballad of Grandpa, Jenny, and John by Old Codger, who happens to like King Crimson, I see.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When I was told this story by my grandpa years ago, it terrified me, though I tried hard not to let it show. Now I'm as old as he was then. I'll relish telling you. I'll tell it as he told it. Sure, it's hellish, but it's true. In Grandpa's village stood an inn, I think, the Rose and Crown, where Grandpa said his mates and he would drink till they fell down. But something happened there one night, the last night of October, that Grandpa said so chilled them all they'd evermore be sober. A man came in that fateful night, escaping from the storm that raged outside, and stood beside the fire that kept them warm. He tipped his hat to Grandpa and to all at Grandpa's table, then limped up to the burnished bar as well as he was able. He rang the bell, a girl appeared, dressed all in white and pale. He asked her for his usual drink. She poured a jug of ale. Then in the glowing ingle nook he sat and sipped a while, before his knowing, "Let's go" look was greeted with a smile. The oaken door flew open with a fell ungodly force. The tempest howled, but Grandpa swore he heard a braying horse. A silence then descended, and a sudden sense of fear, an eerie chilling stillness that robbed all of any cheer. They told the landlord, Bob, I think, the pub's congenial host, who said, "I fear, my friends, that you have all just seen a ghost. Or rather, too, as I know who it was that you all saw. Although I've never seen them, this account I've heard before." The man was known as Peg Leg John, a hated local squire. The scoundrel came here every night to settle by the fire. The girl was Jenny Richardson, great-grandma's lusty niece. They wished to seek the service of a justice of the peace. They stole away this dreadful night and rode off in his carriage. Next morning, village folk were sharing rumors of the marriage. Great-grandma rushed to Lord John's lodge and found them both in bed, and waited till they'd woken up before she shot them dead. The villagers, all worthy souls, approved of what she'd done. They all stepped up and helped her hide her blood-stained, guilty gun. The magistrate could find no proof to say beyond all doubt who killed the wicked couple. She never was found out. My memory of Grandpa telling me, my memory of Grandpa telling me this is so clear. This tale's as true can be, as true as I sit here. Though you may think it all too strange and treat his tale with scorn, it's stranger still to tell you Grandpa died ere I was born. And Yeah. It all comes around. Thomas, start us off.
Oh yeah, well, this is just delightful. I mean, he sets you up really nicely. Though his comment about them drinking till they fell down reminded me of it. Something I read recently was they found someone in England so drunk in the seat of his car that they weren't sure he could see three times the legal limit, you know?
Wow.
But, and Field Codge is definitely Welsh. I've talked to him on a Zoom call. But anyway, this is truly delightful. I like the way it's a tale told by a repeat of a tale told to him by someone else who turns out to have been a ghost themselves. It just creates a whole sort of wonderful spell about all this. And again, it's taking a motif that is a classic, you know, the mother being offended by the daughter and the man who stole her away and shooting them both in bed. Yes, so true. You know, the good win in the end. All sinners must perish. Very well done. I liked it.
Thank you, Thomas. And Jean, please.
Oh, I loved this, too. I thought it was a wonderful tale told. And I loved the twist at the end. You know, Grandpa told her the story, and he died before he was born. I thought that was great. Just a clever piece. You know, it wasn't anything particularly spooky or scary or whatever, but as the story progressed, you know, you got to see the different bits of it that kind of give you that turn. So it was very well done in that respect, definitely.
It was. Although I might suggest the use of the word neighing instead of the word braying. Beyond that, beautifully done.
Right.
Well, donkeys bray, horses neigh, but women neigh as well. They tell you no all the time.
I don't know.
You're walking on boggy ground here, my friend.
I'm sorry, what?
What did you say, Thomas?
I said he's walking on boggy ground, you know. Just be careful. You take the wrong step, your feet suddenly disappear up to your knees, and you leave your shoes behind.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than putting your foot in your mouth.
Well, I was going to say I've known a few men to bray myself, but I left it at that. Okay. Great comments, guys. Oh, my gosh. Okay, now we're all clearing our throats. It's like, wait, see, it's not just me. Okay, Thomas, I got the next one for you. This one's by Chinti.
Okay. Oh, wait, I'm in the wrong place. All right, let me pop this up. And A Haunting in Jerome, Arizona by Chinty. Drinking in the spirit room on Main Street down in Jerome. Barkeep bringing banker's doom, dizzying down my tipsy dome. Mind messing my words, slurring while I pay the bill. Shuffling out, I see blackbirds scattering just up the hill. COVID's crazy, cawing, croaking, a mass around a shabby house. Evening sun, an hour from setting, feeling bold and liquored out. Could have kept the Connor Hotel, stumbling upstairs to sleep. Instead, I sauntered quite pell-mell down street where Corvids creep. Doling, drunken, dizzy hiccups, laughing down a battered sidewalk, reaching where the railing stops, neath the cawing, croaking flock. Roused by a ramshackle roof and dilapidated old stone walls, acting like a fearless, facile goof, curious to wander its aging halls. Laughing and tapping the sign, no trespassing until I showed up, entering like the lot was mine. Soup bittered with red solo cups. Door jammed, lit chained and locked, yet I'm clever enough, though inebriated. Pain is long gone, windows unblocked, a tumbling in sunset and faded. Inhaling the musty and dusty air, floorboards beneath me groaning, coughing loudly without a care. Until I hear a faint, eerie crackling. Getting dark and I'm hearing things, rats and roaches scurrying about, flicking a lighter for the light it brings, barely reaching beyond my route. Rain breathes, like breathing cheap, blowing my flickering flames right out, but atop a broken dresser steep in cobwebs. A candle eases my doubts. Once lit, I swear, a cold whisper lightly lurked, like wispy wayfaring, ear twitching at the words I'd hear. Doom lives here. It's warning. I rolled and tripped out the window, scaring Corvids again, cawing and croaking. Back down the road, not to but fro, until in my room I'm safely breathing. Not with ease I find a fright, nor that I fancy superstition, but heart racing on that dark night, within those walls, I sensed perdition.
Wow. Quite some right there.
Well read, Thomas. Well read. And well composed. Oh, outstanding piece. I urge everybody to leave comments and text. I understand we're up against 12 o'clock. This is a great way to end. Gene, do you want us to carry on commenting, or?
I think we should finish out the comments. I did pass it over to Gray as a carryover, only because I felt that it deserved to be fully heard on the radio. But Thomas, you did an excellent read with that. I thought it was. I liked the wording that he used. Parts of it were like tongue twisters. I was like, oh God, you know. I had no idea it was quite that long when I gave it to you. I knew it was long, but not that long. So it kind of... But definitely an excellent piece, an excellent tale told, clever, and, you know, definitely on the money for the contest at hand. And, yeah, I thought it was just really, really well done. So, I mean, it was written to the word boom, so I think he got it. So, anyway, that's my piece. I'm done. Next. Laurent, are you on mute?
No, I'm right here waiting for you to finish. Thomas, you want to comment, please?
Well, I just thought, you know, he caught it just right, you know, the using the blackbirds and the crazy calling and croaking, creating the noise, the challenging of a drunk too stupid to know what he'd walk into. The whole thing was really well set up and good use of characterization. And nice descriptions, roused by a ramshackle roof and dilapidated old stage stone walls, acting like a fearless, facile goof, curious to wander its ancient calls. I mean, things like that just really help set the whole thing, you know, up properly. Very, very sharp, right? Enjoyed reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Thank you, Thomas. And Jean, it's up to you to close us out.
Okay, well, I think that this is a great night of poetry. Thomas, I appreciate you hanging with us all night. Laurent, thanks for helping me run things. Greg, hope you have a better night. Lou, we love and miss you. It's always good to have you back. Feel better. And I don't know, like, what else is there to say? Excellent poetry tonight. And, yeah, we had 3 carryovers. And, gosh, I knew who they were a minute ago. God, you know, it's like rough. Let's see if I can find out who they are. We had one by Sawa. That's the one I couldn't find earlier. The other one is by Parenchma. Cynthia, as I said, I put him up for one more go-round. And Just Another Poet 65, this is number 4. So anyone, if you didn't hear your piece and you're one of those names, Greg will probably let you know when you're due to be on next. And anyway, have a wonderful, wonderful week. I know it's Monday. And yay, we're going to be there. The week will be, you know, over in no time. And we'll be back on Friday, just saying. Okay, everybody have a great night. Thank you so much, and take care.
Good night, all.
Thanks. Appreciate you all. Bye-bye.